Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into a really pivotal time in American history, the outbreak of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
If you're someone who wants to get a solid handle on major historical events, you know, quickly but thoroughly, this is definitely for you.
Right.
We've got sources here focusing on those very first moments, the sparks, the initial clashes.
The very beginning.
Yeah, exactly. So our mission today, basically, pull out the key info on how it all started, what made the two sides different, and, well, the harsh reality of those early fights.
Absolutely. And looking at the sources, it all really kicks off with secession. It wasn't just political disagreement anymore.
No.
It directly led to the fighting, the Confederacy forming. February 4th, 1861, that was a concrete step.
A real line in the sand. Southern states actually uniting against the Union.
It wasn't just talk. It was like a new government taking shape.
And that tension, it just builds and builds until Fort Sumter, April 12th, 1861. You can almost feel it in the accounts.
Oh, definitely. Major Anderson holding that fort, it becomes this powerful symbol, doesn't it?
Yeah, like Union presence right there in the South, but also the Confederacy trying to, you know, assert itself.
Exactly. It's like the flashpoint.
And Lincoln, wow, he was in a tough spot.
Incredibly difficult. The sources detail it well. If he reinforces the fort, it looks like aggression, right?
Mm-hmm. Could easily escalate things.
And if it pulls out, evacuates. Well, does that legitimize the Confederacy?
Right. Like admitting they have a point.
Hmm.
So what does he do?
His move, sending just food, not troops or ammo, it was strategic. And it led to de-escalate, maybe call their bluff.
But Jefferson Davis didn't see it that way.
No. For the Confederacy, reading between the lines of the sources, it was about sovereignty. They needed to show they were in control.
So attacking the fort from their perspective was sort of necessary.
It's necessary assertion of power, yeah. It seems that way from the materials.
The irony, though, is huge.
Oh, completely. This act meant to cement Southern independence. It actually fired up the North like nothing else.
United them.
Totally. The attack galvanized Northern opinion. Suddenly, Lincoln's call for 75,000 volunteers isn't just met, it's like overwhelmingly supported.
Wow. So that single event really pushed things over the edge into full-scale war.
It absolutely set the stage.
Okay, so war's begun. We've got the Union and the Confederacy.
Mm-hmm.
And right away, it's clear they're starting from very different positions, resource-wise.
Mm-hmm. Vastly different. The North, you know, had way more people, more factories, much better railroads and transportation in general.
That's a huge advantage, isn't it? Especially for a long war.
Absolutely critical. That industrial might gave the North serious long-term potential. The South, on the other hand,
more agricultural.
Relied on cotton.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Heavily reliant on cotton exports. They had strong military leadership, especially early on. But getting the resources together, sustaining the effort, that was always going to be a bigger challenge for them.
And they both had these grand strategies, right? Big plans to win.
Yeah, the Union had the Anaconda Plan. Kind of a vivid name.
Sounds like it. What was the idea? Basically, squeeze the Confederacy, blockade their ports, take control of the Mississippi River to cut the South in two, and capture Richmond, their capital.
Seems logical on paper.
On paper, yes. But blockading thousands of miles of coast, controlling that huge river, easier said than done. Practical hurdles right away.
Okay. And the Confederacy's plan.
Given the North's advantages, they mostly went for a defensive strategy. Protect their territory, try to wear the Union down.
And hope for help.
And hope that Europe's need for cotton would eventually bring countries like Britain or France in on their side.
It's almost funny looking back how both sides thought it would be over quickly.
Yeah, a short, glorious war. That was the initial expectation. Lots of enthusiasm, guys rushing to enlist.
Picturing quick victory parades.
Exactly. But those first battles, they shattered that illusion pretty brutally, didn't they?
They certainly did. It was a harsh wake-up call.
The romantic ideas about war just evaporated fast when faced with, you know, the actual carnage.
And the Battle of Bull Run, July 21st, 1861, that was the first major shock.
Mm-hmm. Near Manassas, Virginia, you had two armies, both pretty green, frankly.
Inexperienced, very.
The Union, under McDowell, actually pushed the Confederates back at first. Things looked good for them initially.
But then
Came the Confederate counterattack, and it just fell apart for the Union, turned into a chaotic retreat.
A rout, basically.
Pretty much. And this is where you get figures like Thomas Jackson earning his nickname Stonewall.
Ah, right, because his troops stood firm.
Stood like a stone wall, exactly. Huge morale boost for the South, showed they could stand up to the Union.
But for the North?
A disaster, a stark realization that this wasn't going to be easy or quick. It killed any lingering idea of a swift victory.
Okay, fast forward a bit to April 1862. Shiloh in Tennessee. This was different.
Oh, yeah. Shiloh was on another level entirely. Horrific casualties. One of the bloodiest battles early on.
And it started with a surprise attack.
A massive Confederate surprise attack on Grant's forces. The Union took heavy, heavy losses on that first day. It looked really bad for them.
But Grant turned it around.
That's what's key about Shiloh and Grant. He didn't panic. He reorganized, launched a counterattack the next day, and eventually pushed the Confederates back. Resilience.
Still the cost.
The cost was immense. Shiloh drove home just how bloody this war was going to be. The sheer number of dead and wounded was staggering.
And it made them rethink things.
It had to. It really highlighted the need for better scouting, reconnaissance, you know, and fortifications, digging in.
Makes sense. Avoid those surprise attacks.
Exactly. And while all this is happening on land, the war at sea or on the rivers is also heating up.
Right, like New Orleans.
The fall of New Orleans in April 62 was huge. Admiral Farragut sailed the Union fleet right past the forts.
That must have been a major blow to the Confederacy.
Massive. New Orleans was their biggest port, vital for trade, cotton exports. Losing it really hurt their supply lines and economy.
And Farragut, he became the first U.S. Navy admiral.
He did. Shows how important naval power was becoming in this conflict, especially controlling the waterways.
Which brings us to the Mississippi River. Hugely strategic, wasn't it?
Absolutely central. The Union knew if they controlled the entire Mississippi, they'd effectively cut the Confederacy in two.
Isolate the western states.
Exactly. Cut off Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana, parts of Tennessee too. So the strategy was to capture key cities along the river.
Like Baton Rouge, Natchez.
Right. And by this point, as the sources mention, only Vicksburg and Port Hudson were left as major Confederate strongholds on the river. Big targets.
And this period also saw new technology, right?
Uh-huh.
Like those ironclad ships.
Oh, yeah, game changers. Suddenly you have ships covered in iron armor, fire resistant, much tougher than wooden ships.
So old wooden navies are suddenly obsolete.
Pretty much, yeah. The Union really embraced them quickly. Ships like the Monitor.
The Monitor. Famous battle, right? Monitor versus the Merrimack.
That's the one, March 1862. Technically, the CSS Virginia, the Confederates rebuilt the Merrimack. But yeah, that clash, it was historic. They just sort of pounded away at each other for hours. Neither could seriously damage the other. But it proved the point. Wooden warships were done. The age of ironclads had arrived.
Wow. And technology was changing on land, too.
Definitely. Big changes in weaponry. Rifled muskets were becoming standard.
Rifled, meaning?
They had grooves inside the barrel, which spun the bullet, made them far more accurate, and gave them longer range than the old smoothbore muskets.
And the bullets themselves were different.
Yes, the mini ball was crucial. It was designed to expand into the rifling when fired. Much more lethal, caused terrible wounds.
So more accurate, faster loading.
Yeah.
Sounds deadly.
It was. Casualty rates started to climb dramatically. Plus, you start seeing other things like early hand grenades, even landmines being used. Combat got much deadlier.
And that accuracy. Did it change how battles were fought?
It absolutely forced changes. Those traditional tactics, like infantry charging across open ground, suddenly suicidal.
Because defenders could pick them off from further away.
Exactly. Which led directly to
trench warfare.
Trench warfare, yeah. Digging in, creating defensive fortifications became essential almost immediately. It offered protection against that much deadlier rifle fire.
So the tech is pushing the tactics.
Constantly. It's becoming a much more brutal, attritional kind of fight.
Okay, let's shift back east. McClellan is leading the main Union army, aiming for Richmond. But he's slow.
Cautious is the word usually used, maybe overly cautious. The sources highlight this a lot. Great organizer, meticulous planner.
But reluctant to actually fight.
Yeah, he often hesitated, seemed to want overwhelming numerical superiority, perfect conditions, which drove Lincoln nuts.
I can imagine. Lincoln wanted action.
Desperately. Eventually, though, McClellan does move towards Richmond in the spring of 62.
And he runs into Robert E. Lee.
He does. And that kicks off the 7 days battles, June, early July, 1862.
Lee had fewer troops, right?
Significantly fewer. But Lee was incredibly aggressive, used bold, sometimes unorthodox tactics. He kept attacking, maneuvering, keeping McClellan off balance.
A real contrast in styles.
Absolutely. And Lee's aggression worked. Despite being outnumbered, he managed to push McClellan back, force him to retreat from Richmond. Huge victory for the Confederacy.
And a major showcase for Lee's generalship.
Definitely established his reputation early on.
Okay, so after that success, Lee decides to invade the North, takes the fight into Maryland.
That's the next big move, yes. September 1862, Lee moves into Maryland.
And then McClellan gets that incredible piece of luck.
Ah, yes, the Lost Order. Someone found a copy of Lee's detailed battle plans wrapped around some cigars.
Seriously. Wow. Talk about a lucky break for McClellan.
Huge advantage. He knew Lee's troop movements where his forces were divided.
So he
He
attacks.
does. At Antietam Creek, near Sharpsburg, Maryland, September 17th, 1862.
And this battle, infamous, isn't it?
Infamous for being the single bloodiest day in American history, the fighting was just ferocious back and forth all day.
Take casualties.
Over 26,000 casualties, killed, wounded, missing in one single day. Just
Oh,
stagnant.
who won?
Tactically, it was kind of a draw. Brutal, bloody stalemate in many ways. But strategically, a Union victory.
How so?
Because Lee's invasion was stopped cold, he was forced to retreat back into Virginia. That was crucial for the Union.
But McClellan, did he follow up?
And that was the problem. Again, he had Lee retreating, potentially vulnerable, but McClellan hesitated, didn't pursue aggressively.
And Lincoln had finally had enough.
That seems to be the case. That failure to destroy Lee's army after Antietam was kind of the last straw. Lincoln removed him from command in November 1862.
But Antietam had bigger consequences too, right? Politically?
Oh, absolutely huge. Even though it wasn't a crushing tactical victory, stopping Lee's invasion gave the North a much-needed morale boost.
And it gave Lincoln the opening he needed.
Exactly. Lincoln had been waiting for a Union victory, even a strategic one, to issue the Emancipation Proclamation. Antietam provided that opportunity.
So it shifted the whole purpose of the war in a way.
Profoundly, it added the abolition of slavery as an explicit Union war aim, a massive turning point, politically and morally.
So wrapping up this deep dive, wow, you really see the rapid slide from political crisis, secession, into this incredibly brutal conflict.
Yeah, the escalation was fast, and those initial ideas of a quick war
Yeah.
just completely demolished by battles like Bull Run, Shiloh.
And we saw how new technology, the ironclads, the rifles, changed everything on the battlefield.
Forced tactical changes led to trench warfare almost immediately.
And contrasting leaders like the cautious McClellan versus the aggressive Lee really shaped those early campaigns.
Definitely. And then Antietam. Such a bloody day, but also such a crucial turning point, paving the way for the Emancipation Proclamation.
It really underscores how unprepared everyone was for the sheer scale and intensity of it all.
That comes through strongly in the sources. The initial, almost naive enthusiasm quickly turned into a grim realization of the long, hard fight ahead.
Right. So, for everyone listening, thinking back on those early expectations of a short war, what factors do you think really dragged it out, made it so devastatingly long? Was it the political decisions, the military strategies, the technology, or maybe just the human element, the sheer determination revealed in those first bloody encounters?
Lots to think about there, the interplay of all those factors.
Definitely something to mull over. Join us next time on The Deep Dive.